Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, we'll be talking with Hoda Kotb, whose new book is 10 Years Later, Six People Who Faced Adversity and Transformed Their Lives. We'll also be talking with mystery novelist Greg Herron, who's the author of two new novels, Timothy and Fashion Victim. And Greg's publisher, Julie Smith, a fine mystery novelist herself, will be here along with him to talk about her new ebook venture, Books Be Nimble. Hoda Kotb has a special place in the hearts of many New Orleanians. Oh, sure, everyone knows her as an award-winning journalist, the host of the fourth hour of the Today Show with Kathy Lee Gifford, and a correspondent for Dateline, and the best-selling author of Hoda, How I Survived War Zones, Bad Hair, Cancer, and Kathy Lee. But we knew her long ago as a beloved local newscaster on WWL-TV, and not coincidentally for a Mardi Gras moment with the Moss Man. Now she's back with a new book, 10 years later, Six People Who Faced Adversity and Transformed Their Lives, written with Jane Lorenzini. Welcome to The Reading Life, Hoda.
Well, look at you, Susan. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
I'm so happy to talk with you. And this is such a great book to begin the new year with because it's so inspiring.
Oh, thank you. By the way, it feels so good to talk to you and to feel so present in New Orleans because it's so funny. Every now and then, like, people will ask me, do you miss New Orleans? And I always say the same thing. I miss it every single day. And I think it's the kind of place that gets inside you and under your skin, and it becomes part of you. And I think with everyone in New Orleans and people around the country and everyone who's been through any kind of difficult times, and we've been through with Katrina and other people here have been through with Hurricane Sandy, and just things that happen in life, you always want a little bit of hope. And this book kind of came about in search of hope, I guess. And we thought it would be kind of a cool concept to take a significant event in someone's life, whether, you know, they lost a job or they got a job, whether they won the lottery or they lost a loved one, and to fast forward 10 years to see what became of them. And I think when you find yourself in a situation, and we all have, where we've been sort of on our knees, it's nice to be able to read about someone to figure out how they emerged and what happened, because sometimes you're in such a dark place, you think, how am I ever getting out? I can't even think about getting out of bed, much less moving forward 10 years. So I'm hopeful that this book will be one of those that lifts you up. You know, when you're feeling lost, you think to yourself, all I need is a road out. Just give me the road out. And I think you'll find with these six incredible people that they found their way out of hardship and they really turned the beat around. And they not only survived, they thrived. They really turned it into something great.
Well, I love that dedication to anyone who's looking for hope. I think that's so inspiring. And you have recently celebrated your own five-year anniversary as a breast cancer survivor. So congratulations for that.
Thank you. It's a weird thing. And again, I felt the same way 5 years ago when, you know, you're sitting here with a very scary diagnosis. And all you can think of is, you know, what's going to become of me and the people who count on me. You know, you feel afraid that you won't be around to do the things you're supposed to do on this earth. And then suddenly you kind of blink your eyes and it's been 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that when the five-year anniversary happened, I was sort of looking around thinking, God, I never imagined, because I feel better and stronger than I did then, even before. You know, you don't realize how much healing you have to do. And you also, your sort of life snaps into focus after a life-altering event. I think for anyone who's ever been through anything big like an illness or a divorce or something, suddenly your life is crystallized. You realize certain things and you stop wasting time. And I think that's one of the things that came out, not just for me, but for the people in this book.
So what was it about 10 years that appealed to you? Was that a way of kind of looking forward for you as well when you looked at these people?
Well, I think sometimes a year isn't enough time to see if someone changes.
Mm-hmm.
5 years, to me, still wasn't quite enough, because you really want to know if there are permanent changes and how someone emerges from something. Because I think it takes 10 to really see what happens and how someone came through something. I think that period of time allows you enough time for your life to kind of settle in, because we can all fake it for a while.
Right.
You know, we can be, I I'm feeling great. But pretty soon life catches up with you. And over the course of 10 years, you'll see lots of additional peaks and valleys, things that you didn't see coming. Sometimes, you know, it's a chance meeting that's a life changer and you don't realize it at the time. And it takes 10 years for it to flush all the way out and for you to see what comes at the end of that road.
So tell us about some of these people. A lot of them are really kind of part of the NBC family or came to you in that way from things you'd covered or people you'd met on the show.
Yeah, it was interesting because sometimes the most interesting stories are right there in front of you and you don't even see them. You know, the very thing you're looking for is the one thing you can't see. That's like from one of those Whitney Houston song or something. And they're right there. We had a producer at Dateline named Pat Weiland. And he's one of these guys, I got to tell you, Susan, who was the producer you were dying to work with. He was so terrific. Unbeknownst to us, like I knew that he wasn't feeling well. He was sick. It turned out he had a drug problem and he had an addiction problem. And in addition to that, he was going through some terrible things at home. His sister was in a terribly abusive relationship and she ended up getting murdered. So this is a guy who we see coming and going at work every day, and we don't know really what's going on behind the scenes because at work he's lucid, he's working hard. You don't realize, you know, what goes on in someone else's home. We didn't realize what was happening with him. And he was really at the lowest point in his life. He lost a family member. He was losing himself, really. And this is a guy who managed to turn it around, who was literally on his knees and thought death would have been a better place to be. And he turned it around. It's explained in the book, but to meet him now, I mean, he's like a shining light. And sometimes everyone's aha moment is different. And I think you'll see in this book, you know, everyone has their way of turning it around. And what's really strange about this is Pat's sister's murder was really what saved his life. Because he said, I couldn't put my parents through another loss. And suddenly he, like, snapped to it. You know, it's a strange thing that you think the worst moment in your life is the thing that's going to save your life. And that's what happened to Pat.
That's what's so interesting about so many of these stories, because so many of these people learn to live for other people.
Yes. Because, you know what, isn't it easier to do something when you're not doing it for yourself? One year I was running this really long race. It was a marathon. God knows how that ever happened. But as I was going, I was in the back of the pack, way in the back. And at the end, a lot of people were struggling. Everyone was running, though, the last stretch. And people had signs on their back. This is for my dad who passed away, or this is for my friends at Vietnam, or this is for, you know, and they were all going. The one person walking at the end had on her shirt, this one's for me.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, it's hard to do when you're doing it just for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much easier to do when you're doing it for someone else, for something bigger than yourself, something outside of you. And I think that's another sort of common theme among the people in this book. You know, everyone's fighting because they have to be there for somebody else, or they don't want to hurt someone. And it's amazing how strong we are. You know, I don't think we know what we're made of until we're in a corner, back against the wall, no way out, and suddenly you find out what you're made of. It's remarkable.
Well, that was so much a part of your first book, that whole notion of continuing to go forward. Just that very word, forward, is such a refrain in that book, which is so wonderful.
Yeah, I think it is one of those things that sometimes you can't see in front of you because you're so lost and it's so dark. And I think, you know, if you can just take one step out, and a friend of mine said this, she said, all someone needs to tell you is there's a path out. It can be the hardest path in the world, Susan. It can be a path that is riddled with landmines and potholes. But if someone says you can get out, it's going to be dangerous and hard, but this is how you do it, you'll go that way. You just need someone to tell you there's a road out of your problems. And I think people feel despair when they don't see that road, no matter how difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think the folks in this book were able to find that path, but they kept their eyes open because sometimes you miss your moment. You miss the person who's going to change your life because you're not aware. A friend of mine has a saying, and the saying is, be here now. Wherever you are, be here now. I'm talking with you on the radio. I'm with you 100. I'm not watching a Law and Order rerun in the back. I'm not, you know, looking at Kathy Lee. I'm talking to you. And I think for everybody, if when you're present in that moment, you don't miss things around you. And I think that's an important takeaway, too.
Well, that important point comes through over and over again. One person can change your life. Mm-hmm. And you look back on Stan Sandroni, who saved your life in 1988.
God, back in the Flintstones. This guy, I know. It was weird because I was on a job hunt. And I'd graduated from college, and I just thought I was going to get a job because I was naive and idealistic. And I thought, gosh, I have a college degree. I'm getting a job. Sure. And then I realized that wasn't the case, and I kept getting rejected and rejected and rejected. And I was in a car on a mission just driving, looking for a job. And everywhere I went, they said, you're not good enough, you're not good enough, you're not good enough. Now, a normal, sane person would have taken that as a big message and maybe rethought her career, and I was very close. Because I had 27 news directors all tell me that I wasn't good enough. And as I was giving up hope and saying, forget it, and this is not for me, I should go into PR, I drove to one more state, and I met a man there named Stan Sandroni, who looked at me, and I thought, oh, my God, this guy's going to reject me. It's going to be the end here. It's going to happen in Mississippi. And he put that tape in the machine, Susan, and he watched it, and he stopped it, and it was my resume tape. He looked at me, and he said, Hoda, I like what I see. I was like, oh, my God. I was like boo-hooing and crying because I was so happy that someone thought I was worth something. And he hired me when no one else would. I mean, look, from 10 years, 1988 to 1998, when I started my job at Dateline in New York, I mean, this guy changed my life. If it wasn't for Stan Sandroni at WXVT-TV in Greenville, Mississippi, I know I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't be living in Manhattan. I wouldn't have gotten to spend the best years in New Orleans. I wouldn't have had any of it. And sometimes you think that who would have ever thought that some stranger would change your life like he did, and he did. And I feel like that's another kind of common theme, Susan, in this book, that sometimes someone steps out of nowhere into your life and rocks your world, and suddenly your life is changed forever.
Well, one of the great things about this book is that there's a lot of gratitude in it.
Yeah.
And there's
a
lot of gratitude in you, too.
Oh, so. I feel lucky every day. I got to tell you, I feel really blessed.
Well, you know, you've got a lot of fans in New Orleans watching that fourth hour, baby.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
I can't wait to see you, Susan.
All right. Well, we miss you here, but you can meet Hoda Kotb Saturday, January 19th at 11 a.m. at Barnes & Noble Metairie, or later January 19th from 3 to 5 at Garden District Bookshop. Thank you so much, Hoda.
Thank you. Have a great day.
My guests today are partners in crime, literary crime that is, Julie Smith and Greg Herron. Julie Smith is the Edgar Award-winning author of four mystery series, including the beloved series set in New Orleans, featuring New Orleans police detective Skip Langdon and poet private investigator Talba Wallace. Greg is the author of series featuring Scotty Bradley and Chance McCloud. They are both longtime friends who are also both authors of young adult fiction. Julie and Greg began as trading Greg's expertise in physical training for Julie's writing advice, and the rest is history. Now, after being writing colleagues, Julie and Greg began a different type of relationship. After founding her ebook company, Books Be Nimble, Julie Smith became Greg Herron's publisher. He became her author. Welcome to The Reading Life, Julie.
Thank you.
Hi, Greg.
Hey.
Now, in this rapidly changing world of ebooks and traditional books, Julie, a lot of authors dream of becoming publishers. What was it that finally motivated you to start Books Be Nimble?
I think it was a conversation I had with a really good friend, Chris Wiltz. You know how one person fires another up. One day, we're talking, and we thought, you know what? Let's just do it. And we did.
So when did you start?
About 2 years ago. I think it must have been in the fall of 2010, because we managed to get the first books up in December. So we're really about 2 years old.
2 years. That's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, Greg, you're such a prolific writer. Did you just write 5 books in 1 year or
yes,
something
I did.
Like that? All right. Now, I would think you would need an ebook publisher just to keep up with your output. But your last book was a traditional book called Timothy.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that book.
Timothy was something I've always wanted to write. I grew up reading mysteries, and when I was a teenager, I used to read a lot of romantic suspense novels. I read Phyllis Whitney and Victoria Holt and Daphne du Maurier, and I always wanted to write that kind of a book. And when I had the opportunity to write one, it's kind of hard. Nobody really writes those kinds of books anymore because the premise doesn't really work anymore because the women had to be wimpy for the
Well, that's reassuring.
Well, they kind of did. They were people things happened to rather than make things happen. And Julie and, of course, and all the other wonderful women mystery writers changed the whole genre in the 80s by coming up with strong, powerful women who go out and make things happen instead of things happen to. So I decided to do one and make the main character a young gay man, which nobody seems to mind the fact that things happen to him instead of he makes things happen.
Well, times have changed. But that book was a standalone for you.
Yes.
And so now, in your new book that Julie's published with Books Be Nimble, Fashion Victim, you went back to a previous series and spun off A New Beginning. So what was it about this character that made you choose her for Fashion Victim?
I've always liked that character. Readers really responded to her, actually more so than they did to my main character, which is kind of not wonderful.
Describe her a bit.
Well, Paige is kind of her own person. Her name's Paige Turner, and she goes her own way. She doesn't really like to be told what to do. She's her own person. She has very little use for men besides the obvious, but... And people have always responded to her because she has a really good sense of humor and she doesn't really play by the rules so much. And so I had always wanted to write something, give her her own book. And I've had a couple of false starts a few times. And then when Julie very graciously said, "Hey, why don't you write a Paige book for me?" I said, "I'm in." Aww. So, and then next thing you know, here we are.
Now, what I like about her is that she's such a straight shooter and she seems to have a really good heart. But lots of times whenever anybody tells her to do something, she just does the opposite, you know?
Yeah, she's kind of like me in that respect. The best way to get me to do something is to tell me not to do it, because then I'll do it then. But she cares about people, but she doesn't really like to be told what to do. And she's never really followed the traditional path. I don't want to spoil anything that's going to come up in future books, but we find out all about her.
Well, the stage is set for future books. Are you going to keep Paige Turner out there in the electronic book world?
Yeah, I think so. I already know what the next one's going to be, and as soon as I finish the one I'm writing now, which is another young adult book, when I finish writing it, and then I'm going to write another Paige book after that, and that one's going to be a lot of fun. It's called The Dead Housewives of New Orleans.
The Dead Housewives. Okay. I can't wait for that.
Yes,
one.
That's going to be fun.
Oh, now, Julie, Greg is just one of your newest authors, but you've published many new and well-known authors. So tell us who are some of the writers who've gone to Books Be Nimble.
Well, some of the local authors are Patty Friedman, Whitney Stewart. We're getting A.M. Harper. I'm very excited about
that's
that.
That's great.
And I published myself.
And your husband.
And my husband,
how
yes.
How is that? Tell us about Lee's book,
Well,
too.
That has its moments. We published a business book by Lee called The Savvy Entrepreneur, and it's done really well. Our nonfiction books, really, they're not our main thing. Our main thing is fiction.
Of course.
Yes.
And how did you assemble your creative team? Because you're not in this alone.
No, I'm not. It's through trial and error, really. Chris quickly dropped out when she realized that this is like a 24/7 kind of thing. And so I had to scurry around and see if I could find people to help. And actually, I had to depend on volunteers at first. I had no money. It's completely bootstrapped. We had no investors. And so I found some volunteers, and that was great. And then as soon as we were able to pay them, we did. And now I think we pay fairly decently. And we've got a very nice working team, I think.
And did Lee dedicate the Savvy Entrepreneur to you, I hope?
Well, he did.
Oh, really?
Because there could have been some trouble otherwise.
Well, one of the things that's so interesting is that, you know, all the predictions for ebooks are good. You know, everybody's saying in 2013, ebooks will surpass traditional books in readership. But there are so many of them out there. How are you finding ways to market these books and find your readership?
Well, that really is a 24-hour proposition, because every single book has to be marketed differently. And you're always looking for keywords and changing the keywords and new places to promote and so forth. It's not really something you should try at home. It's a lot of trouble. However, I will say that somebody like Greg is an author who kind of sells himself, because he has a front list to drive his back list. And somebody like that is able to do really well. I'm hoping all of his Chance McLeod and Scotty Bradley fans will be Paige Turner fans.
Of course, they'll have to be.
They'll have to be.
I'll sign up. So how are you, what are you doing to help market this book, Greg?
People ask me about that all the time, because, and I have this reputation as this really great self-promoter, which just amuses me to no end, because I have no idea what I'm doing. I was blogging years ago when people weren't blogging yet. I guess at the very beginning of it. I do things just for me, and it gets out there and people enjoy it. It's really weird. Like my Facebook page, people love my Facebook page for some reason, because and they really like it when I get cranky about something.
I love it when you're cranky.
See, I rest my case. And so I promote the books on my Facebook page, and I do it on Twitter. And I've never had a website. All these years in 20 books, I've never had a website, but now I actually am getting one. It's in the process of being developed, and I have a really great web designer I'm very excited about, gregherren.com. It's H-E-R-R-E-N.com. And you can actually go there and look at it. It's kind of live, but it's in the process of being developed, but people can go there now and look at my book covers, my book titles, and of course the Page book is on there as well.
Now, Greg, I have to tell you one thing. One of the things I always love on Facebook is when you get a box of new books,
oh.
You always open them up and take a picture of the box of your own books, and you always go, this never gets old. So what do you do when it's an ebook?
Well, that was kind of an interesting kind of, it was different. It was very different, but it was also very exciting in a way, because when I first started as a writer, you would turn the book in, and then a year later, maybe, it would come out. My first book took 2.5 years. It was 2.5 years. And then you get the box of books. And then it was a year. And now the traditional publisher that I'm with now is usually 6 months. It comes out 6 months after I turn the book in. And that's kind of exciting. But then it was really weird. It was a very exciting and strange at the same time to have Julie finish approve the final manuscript after all the edits and everything. And then 3 days later, we're live. It's like, what?
Wow.
Wow.
Three days? Really?
Yeah. It was very exciting. And I would love to have actual print books, because I'm kind of traditional that way, but it's kind of cool having an ebook, because like I have an iPad, and you know, it has the library function.
I know you love that iPad. I know it.
And I have copies of all of my books that are available as ebooks. Not all of them are yet. And every once in a while, I'll just open it up and look at all the covers. And it's in high def, so it's really pretty.
So do you do that with the website too, Julie? Do you look at booksbenimble.com and go, these are really pretty?
I have been known to tell you the truth.
Yes, I have. You're also the only publisher who has ever given me an entire review copy on a flash drive, which I admired so much. And you can send review copies via Amazon, which is also interesting. And that's where the books are for sale, right? Amazon and your
at the
website?
Moment, just Amazon. But in 2013, we're going to go back into Kobo and Sony and Barnes & Noble, all those places as well.
Now, did this come naturally to you, this technological drive? I remember one of your books was centered on an online community, like really early on. So you seem to have been ahead of a lot of curves.
Well, thank you for remembering that. Actually, that was at a time when I was living in Berkeley, and that particular online community that I based it on was way ahead of me. I was like the last person to be there, and I'm really pretty much a Luddite until I got involved in this. And when I got involved in it, it was an amazing learning curve. I am now as nerdy as the next person, if I do say so.
I hope to become nerdier in 2013. Well, you can get Greg Herron's book at Amazon.com, and you can find out more about Books Be Nimble by visiting their website, booksbenimble.com. That's books, the letter B, nimble.com. Thanks, you two.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The book club at the Ogden Museum of Southern Art discusses North Toward Home by Willie Morris, Tuesday, January 15th from 5:30 to 7 at the Ogden Museum of Southern Art, open to members only. The next meeting's February 26th when the group discusses I Am the Darker Brother, an anthology of modern poems by African Americans. Tulane University Law School's Vernon Palmer discusses his new book, Through the Codes Darkly, Slave Law and Civil Law in Louisiana, Tuesday, January 15th at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. William Rao discusses and signs his book, 19th Century European Painting from Barbizon to La Belle Époque, Tuesday, January 15th from 5:30 to 7 at Garden District Bookshop. Damon Farrell Marbot signs his book, Awake in the Mad World, Wednesday, January 16th at 6 p.m. at Maple Street Bookshop Uptown. Missy Wilkinson, the special sections editor for Gambit, discusses Breaking into Journalism Wednesday, January 16th at 7 p.m. at East Bank Regional Library, 4747 West Napoleon and Metairie. Her presentation's titled, How Do I Climb the Ladder When the Center Won't Hold? Breaking into Journalism in a Shifting Media Landscape. Lauren Godin and photographer Romney Caruso celebrate the launch of their new book, New Orleans Chef's Table, Extraordinary Recipes from the French Quarter to the Garden District, Thursday, January 17th at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. The creative writing programs at the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts and Lusher Charter School present the distinguished essayist, novelist, and acclaimed film critic Philip Lopate as part of the 2013 New Orleans New Writers Literary Festival. That's Thursday, January 17th at 7 p.m. at NOCA. The Octavia Books Book Club discusses The Time in Between by Maria Duenas, Saturday, January 19th at 10:30 a.m. at Octavia Books. Today's guest, Hoda Kotb, discusses and signs her book, 10 Years Later, Six People Who Faced Adversity and Transformed Their Lives, Saturday, January 19th at 11 a.m. at Barnes & Noble Metairie, and again from 3 to 5 at Garden District Bookshop. Kim Marie Vaz presents and signs her new book, The Baby Dolls, Breaking the Race and Gender Barriers of the New Orleans Mardi Gras Tradition, Tuesday, January 22nd at 6 p.m. at Octavia Books. The Greater New Orleans Writing Project at the University of New Orleans invites teachers, literacy professionals, and school administrators to Write Fest 2013, an all-day conference focused on writing, creativity, and the Common Core. It takes place Saturday, January 26 from 8:30 to 4 at the Lindy Boggs Conference Center and will feature Louisiana's leading teachers, as well as nationally renowned educator Barry Lane, author of But How Do You Teach Writing? A Simple Guide for All Teachers, The Reviser's Toolbox, and Why We Must Run with Scissors, Voice Lessons in Persuasive Writing. Teachers or administrators interested in registering for WriteFest should visit gnowp.org. And Amy Bender's visit as the 2013 Zell Kimmerling Writer in Residence at Tulane University has been moved from March up to January. Bender, whose most recent novel is The Particular Sadness of Lemon Cake, will give a reading January 28th at 7 p.m. in the Freeman Auditorium at Tulane University. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.
The